Okay, the recording is started.
Good day, everyone, and welcome, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea, eagles on the ground and planes in the air. We appreciate you tuning in to www.enlightenedradio.org. You have joined the Sports Report on May 8th. 2023. It's the sports attack, actually, because we attack sports. No, we don't. We just say sports attack because I'm a spaz. And we have your original Dusty Footed Philosopher and the man who makes everything go, EditLightRadio.org. His name is Mr. John Case. We love to have him here. Hi, John.
What? Me worrying?
I am Michael Cucurini, ready to talk about Victor Wembanyama.
What?
Victor Wembanyama! Say it. Learn to say it. Learn to say it. You better learn to say it. Superstar. Superstar in the making.
Wembanyama.
19-year-old signed his first professional contract when he was 15 in France.
Wow.
He is 7'5". And he can dribble the ball, he can pass the ball, and he can shoot threes. That's not fair. That's simply not fair. Oh, he leads the league in shots and block shots, too. And he also leads the league in steals.
You know, his bedroom must be the size of a Metro car.
I think so. I think that's just the bed.
Jesus.
I mean, you're going to run into the same issues that Andre the Giant ran into. They had to put him in the basement.
I know. He's going to need some.
And hotels? Yeah, because McMahon worked out this thing where wherever Andre traveled, they'd have to have a double king-size bed in the basement.
Yeah, otherwise, what the hell is he going to do?
Well, his legs are hanging off. You know?
I can't sleep.
Well, the fascinating thing is he was at his size because of a disease. This kid, Victor, is so well. I mean, he's very thin. He's very thin, and that's the only thing that would concern me. He's got a lot of speed, a lot of strength, but he needs to put some meat on his bones because I'm watching some of the NBA playoff games. And I have to tell you, these guys literally beat the shit out of each other on the court. There's no, I'm going to play around here, play around. You know, there's a sense of urgency by everyone. And that's, you're looking at the Sixers against the Celtics, and you've got the MVP of the league playing for the Sixers. His name is Joel Embiid. He is phenomenal. He's big. He's strong. And he's been injured, and he's still out there. He's got a knee brace on, and he hates it. He freaking hates it.
You know, Mike, this is an occasion to make note of the famous discovery by Isaac Newton called force equals mass times acceleration. And, of course, how much one weighs would be a big factor, a multiplier, indeed, of the force. And so, yeah.
So that theory put into in its real work is Saturday night on, speaking of ABC, on ABC and ESPN, is the $1 million bowl, the XFL championship between the, I believe it's the Houston Renegades and the DC Defenders. Oh, no, Arlington Renegades. I'm sorry. Arlington Renegades and the DC Defenders, taking place in the Alamo Bowl in San Antonio. So DC has the better record. You know, these games, throw that out the window. Because in championship games, especially in football, it is an idea of scheming. Can you take your playbook that this team has already seen, and you've already seen theirs, you know what they're really good at, they know what you're really good at. You have to play off your tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
If you're famous for running the football on third down or second down or whatever the hell it is, run a play action.
Yeah. Get famous.
Take it to the guy that you normally hand it to. Turn around and throw it down the field and see what the hell happens. You got to change things up, man.
Yeah.
So, we'll see if they do. they certainly have They have Greg Williams as the defensive coordinator, and I'm all right with Greg. I mean, he got in a lot of trouble when he was the defensive coordinator for the New Orleans Saints because it was called. Do you remember a thing called Bounty Gate a couple years ago?
I remember the phrase, but
they were putting money up.
Yeah.
If you hurt somebody on the other team and you're not supposed to.
Right.
Kind of the whole principle of the game is you're going to hurt the other. You're going to get hurt and you're going to hurt the other person. That's football. Yeah. It's a sad fact. I'm not proud to say that I've been injured quite a bit in football, but honestly, when I was a kid, it was a lot of fun.
Is it too dangerous? Is it really too dangerous?
The downside of it as you grow up.
If you were managing sports in the United States, would you eliminate or change? What would you do about football? Because it's a high injury sport. And
I have to tell you, I was watching the Pro Bowl this past year.
Right.
Pro Bowl in the NFL, they went to flag football because they didn't want any of their people who made the Pro Bowl getting hurt wearing uniforms and beating the shit out of each other for no reason.
Right.
So they thought, hey, let's have flag football. Man, watching those guys play flag was like, you know what? I settled in and enjoyed the game. I'm like, this is really cool.
That's interesting.
I like flag football.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And there are professional flag football leagues. So there is a ladies professional flag football league that's doing very well.
Right.
The USFL, as a consequence of the XFL success, I think is being usurped. I think you may see a purge of those two leagues to just be one feeder league into the NFL. Because the USFL was developed as an alternative to the NFL.
Yes, it was.
You know, they signed a lot of guys whose contracts were up in the air for a ridiculous amount of money that they never could afford to pay those guys. But they signed them.
They're still filling the stadiums in most areas, or not, or is it mixed?
It's about, for the XFL, it's probably somewhere near 70%, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really good number for them. They've never had that.
Is that
before.
Like an average
DC, they're sold out every game.
Okay. Yeah.
They sold out almost every. The only time they didn't sell out was a horrible rainstorm.
Well, this has to be a premium market because you have a lot of high incomes in the Washington, D.C. area. The level of professionals is big.
It's like $65 for a really good seat and $25 for just a standard seat.
Yeah, well.
That's not the same, man, as the NFL, you know, and it's at Audi Field, which is D.C. United's soccer stadium.
Right.
I mean, it's just it's a wonderful field. It really is. And you can't hate on the beer snake. You gotta love the beer snake.
Right, right.
So did you see what happened when they started yelling at the referees and all the security started screaming at people in the stands in D.C.?
No, I didn't see what the outcome was.
They started throwing lemon slices on the field.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
They were throwing lemon slices at everybody. They were trying to break up the beer snake, and it's like, it's our beer snake. We'll kill you. So the next week, one of the owners, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, said, let him have the beer snake. Let it go. So what? They threw a couple of lemons on the field. Let's not hurt anybody. I don't want to take anybody. They're like, you're going to get taken to court. No. These are really, really disjointed, frustrated former Washington football fans of the previous team. Or the team that's there now. Now, you're going to have a lot more Commanders fans with the new ownership. I think there's going to be people re-upping their season tickets.
I remember one time Ben and I went to a Phillies game in Philly. And we were out there in right center field. We were pretty far out. We had a cheap seats. Anyway, some guy out there, he had a car battery. which had to wait in this kind of sling that he had with him that I'm not quite sure how that worked, but he swung and slung this thing out onto the field aimed at the center fielder who had just declared he was going to be traded to another team. I can't remember his name right now. It was considered an assault. And all of a sudden, man, there must have been about 40 uniformed people came on and grabbed that.
Was that back when Philly won the World Series with Chase?
No, it was before.
Oh, okay, so it was way before
that. Yeah, we were living. It was before we got here, but like before 2003. So just some era before that. Okay.
I know when the Nats went back to Philly and Worth came to the plate, all you heard was
It might have been Worth. I think it was him. Jason Worth.
Sign with the Nats. And it was like, everybody was like, what is wrong with you learners? Why did you give this guy so much freaking money? Well, I guess we found out, didn't we?
Yeah.
He had one of the best hitting percentages as a Nat. He was a really, really good ball player. Yeah. He didn't take any shit off anybody. And he didn't mind, like, he'd get in so much trouble cursing on the air. He didn't give a shit. He didn't care.
Was he a union rep? Was he part of the union leadership at some point?
I don't think
team?
So. No. Jason was not. No. Right. Jason got in trouble because he liked to drive his car like 127 miles an hour down 95.
He liked long hair too.
Yeah. So he got, what happened?
I had to take a brief break. I can still hear you. You can see me.
Oh, no, I can't.
Well, that's my photograph. That's what's going to, they're doing a photograph of me and they're going to mount it over somewhere in the Middle East. But see, the American part of me is going to be invisible.
This is very strange.
And they're going to call me the immigrant.
Okay, well, there's a note and then I don't know. Oh, there you are. Okay. That was weird.
No, I just turned my photo off so that I could.
Oh, okay.
I had to read an important email.
I felt like I might have pressed the wrong button. I was like,
no, it was me, not you.
I screw everything up on the computer. Right. I can't even download free music on Google Play.
Well, in terms of sports events, I want you to give me a heads up. I know you probably follow this too, but what's the next round of the Olympics? And how is the new or the altered geopolitical situation going to affect whether or not it can even take place, or how or who would participate, or and there's been some corruption scandals I remember and
dumb.
Charged, you know, at least with
dumb.
What's happening, Mike?
The entire Olympic Committee's corrupt.
Oh God,
they're all full of shit. They're all full of shit out.
We have this great, and we've been able to give so many people so many jobs in this area.
Don't tell them we're shipping them for Guatemala and not paying them. Okay, here's what we're doing. We are getting workers internationally from all over the place that want to do this kind of work. Sometimes Americans just don't want to do this kind of work, so we bring in some folks that really are motivated. Get the cattle prod. We really like to motivate our employees. Okay. All right. Now we know how the Olympic villages were built.
If you perform well, you won't be raped.
Yes. This is your mission. Yeah. Should you choose to accept it, it would be very good for you. Because if you don't, you will no longer exist.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. And you're new.
I don't know, John.
I don't know.
Honestly, I'm just not into the Olympics that much. I'm into more.
Well, okay.
National sports. I used to be an Olympic nut job. I used to love the Olympics. Winter, summer, whatever the games were, I loved the addition of some of the X Games and the snowboarding and all that stuff. And now I'm just like, I just don't give a shit.
Well, by comparison, for example, you know, you see the world soccer matches are certainly a global Olympic-like, you know, event, right? That goes on for quite a while.
The World Cup.
World Cup. And you got tons of countries that are participating.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, now and of course there's, you know, whatever the economics of each team's ability to participate and all this other shit that goes on. I mean, I'm sure that's there's no small amount of deals being cooked during that.
But do you get the sense that
it's cleaner or dirtier than the Olympic thing?
I think they're both on a par.
Okay, probably.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of just backdoor deals, things that are, you know, I don't know. I say that, and I, you know, to what degree are there really backdoor deals? If there were really that many backdoor deals, Wrexham would have been in the top echelon Premier League. They're only one above the shittiest league. So, yeah. But still, congratulations to Rob and Ryan Reynolds for getting Wrexham to the next level. They promised they would do that, and they did it. So, congrats, guys. And they're playing like a house of fire. And they're actually getting in to Wrexham some really, really good soccer players.
What is Wrexham?
Again, too, soccer players, the thing that people don't realize is that is a contact sport. That is the same thing as basketball. It's just with your legs, so much with your legs.
Right.
You know, and if you're a goalie, it has to do with your whole body. So that's not any, those sports are hard, man, hard on your body. You play that stuff for, you know, 15, 20 years, you'll be fortunate. You'll be really fortunate.
Yeah.
If you can get a 10-year career at a Major League Soccer, World Cup Soccer, if you can get a 10-year career out of baseball, you can get vested and you'll have benefits and retirement. So, you know, a lot of times – we've had this thing in baseball for years where we always have like local broadcast baseball. So you have all these little Masson, all these networks that are, you know, I have the rights to broadcast the Orioles and the Nationals, and I'm just going to go with the Orioles because I don't like the Nationals. Peter Angelos told me not to like you guys, so fuck you. I'm not giving you any money.
Yeah. Right. Hey, by the way, we're at we're at 15 minutes, and if you want to bring on Michael Aronin,
I couldn't be more excited, John.
Yeah.
To do this interview, I wanted to do this for a while. This gentleman's a really, really good friend of mine. He's kind of picked me up when I was feeling down, and I know it sounds strange, but he has, and I just have all the respect in the world for him. Even though deep down inside, I honestly believe he could, in fact, be Beelzebub very easily. He could be the devil. There's no – God love him, but he will manipulate you, and if you fall for it, you're
he has
an idiot.
He has a devilish –
But I'm so excited. He wobbles, but he doesn't fall down. Ladies and gentlemen, here's our interview with Michael Aronin.
All right. Coming right up.
Recording stopped.
Now we are recording. Okay, check 1, 2. We're good. All right. So from now on, you can do as you wish.
Oh, very good. Welcome, everyone, to enlightenradio.org. This is the interview. And mostly we concentrate on some of the stand-up comics in the area. Sometimes we have some rock and rollers. But as luck would have it this afternoon, we have a very, very special guest who has been working in comedy, from what I know of, some 25 years or over, right, Michael? Would that be correct?
Yes.
Somewhere 30 years, yeah, like going on 30. We're right, like 1988, I think, 89?
No, I started like 93.
Right, because I was screwing around. I was messing around, and I wasn't really involved in it. Like, I didn't push myself until like the third or fourth year. And then when we met, you and I'd come over to Baltimore. You always made me feel welcome. You'd always like come up to me and like poke me. You'd always like, hey, what are you doing here? I'm going to try to do some time. And you'd be like, yeah, that's about all you're going to do. I love it because from the jump, you insulted me. And anything I can think of for an act, you just, bam, just, you know. But the thing is you also were so much fun and knowledgeable about where everybody was.
Thanks. And, you know, when I started open mics, and, like, the pros were there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I would walk up and I would be, like, nervous to talk to them. I'm like, you're a true comedian, like Michael Cooper. No, I'm being serious.
Dude, I get it, because you see them working and you're not working.
Yeah,
and that's, you automatically give them what we call professional deference. You're just like, yes. You do it and I don't. And then you find out, like, 3 or 4 years later, like, this guy sucks. What is Well, let me start by saying this is Michael Aronin, a good friend of mine. He's also a stand-up comic, brilliant actor. He was in a TV show that was a pilot that should have been picked up, but it wasn't. Thanks a lot, Comedy Central! Anyway. Christopher Titus, it was his creation called Special Unit, and I'm going to go ahead and tee Mike up to talk about that for a sec. Mike, would you like to discuss a little bit of Special Unit?
Yes. So Chris and I worked at the Improv that used to be in Baltimore, and then a couple of years later, he wrote this show called Special Unit. Right. And got it greenlit by Comedy Central. We shot the pilot. This is like 06, I think.
Right. And, yeah, I think, yeah, 06, 07, somewhere.
We were fortunate enough that Brian Cranston directed our pilot.
Amazing.
What happened was Titus, when he had Titus, they shared a soundstage with Malcolm in the Middle.
Ah.
And Titus and Brian got to befriend each other just being in the same building. So when Titus got this greenlit, he asked Brian to direct. And Brian's just the nicest guy around and just so talented as a director and so patient.
That's very cool. Wow. You like hearing stuff like that. You know, that's like, be careful when you meet your heroes, because sometimes it's a huge disappointment. And with Cranston, I guess it was not. It was just a delight to work with him, huh?
You know, can I tell a cool story about
anytime, man? That's, Michael, that's why you're here, to tell cool stories. That's awesome.
So about 2 years before Special Unit, I won this disabled comedy contest at the LA Improv. And this,
Can I pause you right there, Mike, for a sec?
Yeah.
We did not address this enough. I'm terribly sorry to anybody out there. Michael Aronin, I'm going to go ahead and let you talk about your disability, because I think that's important too. And I'm sorry I missed that.
No. I was born Jewish. It's a rare.
You know, it's weird too, because you were born bald and you're still bald.
Right? Yes. No, I was born not breathing, lack of oxygen, cerebral palsy. And by the way, Josh Blue is milking it on the real deal. No one.
Man, I hope we can edit that out. We're going to get in so much trouble, you asshole.
But by the way, John.
Love Josh.
Keep me down. Thank you. So, couple years before Special Unit, I'm at the LA Improv, and I win this comedy competition, disabled comedy contest, and that was my first year there. This guy, Jeff, in a wheelchair, came in second. And I found out later he came in second the year before, and he was pissed. He in the lobby, I should have won. Blah, 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 blah. Fast forward to special unit. He's an extra in the scene. I walk up to him and I'm like, hey, Jeff, how are you? And he's like, hey, Mike, are you an extra two in this? And I said, no, I'm one of the leads. Take care, bye.
Wow. See, he's like, dee, 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 dee. Nye, 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 nye.
No, you know what? It is so nice to say a very polite fuck you. I love that.
That's the most, that's kind of the ultimate, and on many occasions where you can just do that without even saying it. Isn't it really kind of, because you know, and the person knows? That guy knows that he doesn't have your talent.
You know, I don't know this for a fact, but I heard a story that Rodney Dangerfield, when he finally made it, he screwed over all the bookers that screwed him before he made it. And you know what? I get it.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me.
I get it.
It wouldn't surprise me. But eventually, for me, I mean, I know you and I have talked about that, and that's a nice thought to hold on to. But for me, it got to the point where it wasn't healthy. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just like, look, you know, I know you and I both know what's happened in the business. We were there. We saw it. We heard people say this, that, and the other thing. I mean, Christ, if you listen to some of the podcasts out there about the shit I did back in the day, I apparently killed a small baby in front of their family. Some bullshit like that. I don't even recognize who the fuck they're talking. I'm listening to them thinking, this guy's a fucking criminal. He should have been arrested. If half the shit was true that was coming out of their mouth about some of the shit they thought I did, which I did not do. Some of it I'd be like, yeah, man, right on. That was me. Because I have done some stupid shit on the road. I think we all have, you know, to one degree or another.
Yeah, not stupid shit, but I have a funny story. I was working Roanoke. You worked Roanoke.
I did.
And the condo was like in Crack Alley.
Across the street was the rehab center that they were hanging out shooting up at.
Mike, am I lying? I am not lying.
No, not at all.
I'm in the condo and I'm in the shower. It's like a bathtub shower.
Right. No, I know. I remember.
And the fixture around the light in the bathroom was glass. And as I'm in the shower, it fell. And the hard floor, it shattered all over the bathroom. So I'm in the shower naked. I hear this crash and I look out and then there's glass like everywhere. And I'm like, how the fuck am I going to get out of this tub with the CP? That isn't challenging enough. Now I have glass all over the floor. Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, way to go, Jimmy. Nice. You're always afraid in that condo. You had no confidence of turning anything on, like a radio, a TV, a faucet, a toilet. It didn't matter. You were always sure something didn't fucking work.
You know, I could put up with a lot, but there were some hotels that really scared me. Like one hotel, I just walked in, I'm like, I'm not staying here. Have you ever done that on a gig, like not staying?
I did that. I actually was late running over to the hotel. I had to check in and then turn around and go straight back to the club. I'm not going to say what club it was, but you'll be able to figure it out when I say Tennessee. So I run to the club And I thought, you know, man, I'd really like to grab a cup of coffee. And I stopped to get a cup of coffee. And the guy was being held up. There's a guy outside calling 9. There's a person with a gun, like right at the, and I was like, I said, you know what? Now I don't need the coffee. I'm very much awake. I drove over to the gig and asked the guy, hey, look, is there any way I can move? And I explained the story to him, and it was right next to where the hotel was. And he was like, well, if you want to, you know, I tell guys you can stay at the Comfort Inn or wherever the hell outside. It was like 45 minutes, but I said, you know what? That's fine. I went back after the show that night because there was only one leading up to, I believe it was Thursday, and there was one, and then two on Friday, two on Saturday. Kind of old school. But, yeah, I just drove, packed all my stuff because it was just sitting there in the room. And, you know, it was kind of proof positive when I came back from the gig, dude, and you get those keys, you know, the card keys. I hit the card key, and I was like, that's not working. And I hit the door opened right up. I was like, this is probably the most cathartic thing I ever did on the road. Is like, it's telling me, don't stay here or you'll die.
Yeah.
You know, so I said, I went down and I called ahead using the club's phone, asking if the Comfort Inn had any, and they said, yeah, we got some rooms available. And I went ahead and just paid for my own room.
I not like sleepy hotels, but I've had this experience. Ever check in, they give you a room, you open the door, and there's someone already in the room. Like the front desk screwed up. That is so uncomfortable.
Three times.
Really?
Three times over the history. I think the first time it happened, I was just a eager young comic getting on the road, just kind of figuring things out. It was in, I believe it was in Pittsburgh. So I went to go check in, and I opened the door, and there's a little like 4 or 5 year old, like, hi, my mommy's in the shower. My daddy's taking a nap. I was like, I just closed the door. Sorry, I closed the door real quick. And so embarrassed, and go to the front desk, and I said, hey, you know, this isn't. He goes, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did check somebody in there.
So did you shower with her?
He gave me, yeah. Hey, your old man's taking a nap. I might as well go in. Let's not waste the water. We can't go to, that's some nasty shit. I'm not going to. He goat me into this shit, and then that reminds me of a story about a girl, and I ain't not going there, pal. I'm not today. But I would ask this too: is years and years of stand up, Michael? I've seen you work. You enjoy playing with the crowd a little bit, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if you're good at it. You've actually taught me to be better at it. Thank you. Watching you is very comfortable for the crowd to respond to your questions. And I don't know. I think it's more, it doesn't have anything to do with the CP. I think it's just more your personality. You're just very likable.
Well, thank you. And I figured out, you know, early into stand up, if I didn't talk to the crowd, there's a level of uncomfort. So I do it, you know, to ease that uncomfort.
So you said because you're Jewish, right?
Right. And the second reason is, and I truly believe this, a lot of comics think, you know, this is my show. I go on stage with the opposite. It's their show.
Yeah,
they
paid for it.
And you know what? I'm there because they paid. I was hired. It's my job. So talking to them and engaging them makes it more their show.
Yeah, I mean, the more of a participatory aspect of it. And some of them, in many cases are really embarrassed that you called them out to begin with, but they have so much fun. They still smile, you know.
Yeah.
Smile. They don't want that spotlight, but yet they're willing to go back and forth with you. And I find that just a really, really creative and funny. And I've seen you do some of your most wonderful quips, like right off the top of your head with crowd work, man.
Thank you. Now, I was at 2 weeks ago in this place called Mar-a-Lago, and this guy with orange hair was like making fun of me. He thought I was a reporter. And I said, shut the fuck up. I'm doing my act. And I'm like, you know, even Barron's telling his dad to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. His lawyers have done it for 40 years and they're just exhausted. Half of them are dead. You know, he's run through half of his lawyers and killed themselves. So I'm kidding. I don't know if that happened or not. And that's a horrible thing to say. I'm sorry. But
yeah.
You know, if you worked with, I mean, I do know some people who, a friend of mine who I worked with, not in stand up and not in my old profession, but in painting houses. My father, thank God, before he left this world, taught all of us a little bit of a trade and how to paint a house. And we were painting houses, and I met this guy through painting houses. He had a full-time career. Mine was, you know, I was just picking up some cash here or there, painting houses. This gentleman, his father had a thriving painting business in New York. You know where this is going, right? He was hired to paint something. Hold on one second. He was hired to paint something for the orange shit blossom, and he didn't get paid. It was supposed to be some big. He was like, "Oh man, this is gonna really put us." It actually set him back like 4 years. The guy ended up taking his company and moving it to Florida because he got a better deal there. He had to let everybody go. You know, that's the kind of thing that you don't see reported on the news. It's just the up and down bullshit about, oh, we surveyed, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, the reality is this guy's been doing this kind of shit in business. I know there's other people that do that kind of business too, but he's been doing this shit for 40, 50 years, right? I mean, that's kind of a fact.
Michael, can I ask a serious question?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
And there's no right answer or wrong answer. I always battle with, are we going down like getting worse as a society, or in the age of social media and that things can be so instant, is it just always been there, but the access to it is instantaneous?
Okay, I'm going to break it down to where I think it's both. I think it's probably about 75% of what you're talking about. And the other percentage is, I think, sometimes forced manipulation.
Yes.
Some, you know, you got to be careful online because you don't know who's commenting. Yeah. Like, you'll find out that,
yeah,
like I did, somebody made some kind of comment on something I posted, and I went in and found out there was like 4 or 5 bots attacking me, attacking the post. And I'm like, oh, I feel so, man, I've arrived. I have arrived. I've been attacked by bots. This is so sweet. But I still had to go in and delete each one of the comments, you know, just get rid of them. I don't need that kind of negativity. I mean, you and I were just talking about that. When it builds up for me to where everything becomes almost like vengeful, it's not worth it. I think sometimes too, Michael, if you sit back and watch, a lot of the people that you might have an issue with, that everybody else has an issue with, eventually there's a comeuppance. Eventually. I don't want to say the name Brad Reeder, but here's the thing. He's, you know, I mean, come on, man. These people will heap the shit on themselves, and I think you know that.
By the way, just to let you know, you can see me. I'm shaking a little, not due to the CP. Under my desk is Tucker Carlson, and he's doing a bad job right now. So, Down, Tucker, down. Good boy.
Ow! Ow, that was so funny it hurt, Michael. Yeah, I mean, this guy's taking over the whole show. It's like, you know, it's like Larry King on Don and Mike. This is,
hey, we took over the show.
You know, I, like, when I was in college, this early.
Wait, like, you went to college?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Like Morton Downey Jr., remember that guy?
Oh, God, yeah.
he was like the big controversial personality.
I know. He also chain smoked during his show.
Yes. Crazy. Yes.
Like,
yeah, I wonder what he was like off camera, like. If he was
none of these people are are what you think they are when they're off. They're completely like it's such a persona, and sometimes I think it's such bullshit.
I tell you, back in the like mid-90s, before he went to satellite, I had the pleasure of being on the Howard Stern show.
I remember that to this day. That was awesome.
In studio, and Michael, I have no reason to BS here. One of the nicest guys I've met, so humble.
Good dude, really good dude, and actually, you know, pretty revolutionary in terms of what he was able to achieve. Not a lot of people get an opportunity to achieve what Howard did. And the thing about it is, too, is you make a very good point, because I think to me, some of the best interviewers that are also performers and entertainers, like, you know, Johnny Carson was an excellent interviewer. Letterman, I didn't think Jay was that great. I thought Jay was a much better stand-up than he was interviewer. But I think Colbert is a really good interviewer. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand. You know what I mean? A little bit. You understand that it's about the show and not about the stand-up.
I'll tell you, I haven't seen his show. I don't have Apple, but I've seen clips on TikTok of Jon Stewart going after people. And God, is he.
Oh, my God.
So brilliant.
Still, yes. Yes, still. Yes. I like John. I like him and John Oliver. Those are some of my faves, man.
And, I mean, I'll ask you in a second, or do you go first? Like big time, you know, big. Who's your favorite? Who are a couple of your favorite stand-ups, Michael?
Well, I would say some of them had the most impact on me was probably, unfortunately, it was Bill Cosby, originally early on when no one knew he was
right.
He had a big influence on me when I was a little kid. I told you that story a long time ago. I will actually tell that story when I interview myself, and that's coming up sometime and when we figure out the tech. But I would say probably early on it had to be Regan Murphy, Eddie Murphy, Brian Regan, Sam Kennison, little Richard Pryor, and probably really early on, I was probably directly influenced by Chappelle.
Yes. Just
watching that develop in DC was phenomenal.
Chappelle is awesome. And one comic that I think is just outright brilliant. And before, let me just get this out. I love Ricky Gervais, and why I love him, not only is he funny, but I love that he's up there like,
give a shit.
You could laugh or don't. I'm still doing my act.
Fuck you. And I'm very rich. I told you how many TV shows I have sold through syndication. I mean, he's just crazy. He's still cashing the office checks, dude. He's still extras.
But what I love about him is, you know, I think he's up there for him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just so comfortable in his own skin.
It's just the funniest damn thing to see somebody that has literally, as you and I have talked about, somebody who has fuck you money and can afford to go up and say, nobody's cutting the mic on me. I'm making these decisions. I'm the executive producer. I'm the director. I'm the writer. I'm the performer. Go fuck yourself. You guys are just the audience. That's it.
Michael, let me ask you something. And how much time do we have? Seriously.
We have a few more minutes left, but I got to get to something before we do. But go ahead, Michael.
Okay, just a question. In your opinion, guys like Ricky Gervais, Seinfeld, Kevin James, Adam Sandler, they don't need the money. Why do you think they still tour and love doing shows?
I think there's a passion for live performing. I think sometimes, okay. I think sometimes you and I have talked about this. There's no better energy, I think, for originally a stand-up to leave and then come back. What about the producer and director of so many movies? I can't remember his name. He wrote a script specifically for Amy Schumer. I don't know if you remember the guy. And he decided that after being away from the stage for 14 years, he went back on tour. And I can't even imagine what that's like. But he said it was really, really, the first two or three shows were really hard. He said he was stumbling, couldn't remember shit, you know, that kind of thing. It was old school. And then by the fourth or fifth show, that muscle memory kicked in, and he said the rest was history.
And then there's people like Lisa Lampanelli, Natalie, who should have quit, like, before she started.
I didn't say that, Michael did, but I'll say this, Michael. You smart ass. We're so happy to have you on the show today.
Love you. Hey, John, can you shut up?
Hey, John, thanks for talking so fucking much. Jesus, John. Listen, Michael, I have... Michael, I just have one more thing I want to talk about, because I want us to get this in, and John has to cut anything. He'll probably cut the first 20 minutes. But here's the thing. You currently, right now, are involved in a project that you're attempting to sell to a network, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Michael, with all due respect, I'd rather not. Until it's sold.
Okay.
I we're keeping it.
I get it. I totally get it, bro.
Yeah.
I totally get it. I'm Michael, I'm sorry. Wanted to promote that.
It does involve me and a donkey. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Donkey, a bonfire, and some really, really interesting chemicals.
Love you, Michael. Take
Thank
care.
You, Mikey. Love nice you.
Nice seeing you, John. Bye.
Good to see you, Michael. Too. Thanks Thank so much. You. All right. Take care.
John, thank you.
All right. Take care, bud. I got it.